Arundhati Roy's voice on Democracy Now! Calling for the freedom to love. How sweet is that? It's a great way to wind up today's Democracy Now! Broadcast. I just have a few seconds, but I'd like to ask you to call in right now to support what you love on KBOO. Democracy Now! Call in, support KBOO, call to support Democracy Now! And the number is 877-500-5266. We will proudly answer the phone with our headsets and computers now. 877-500-5266. And I'm laughing because it used to be just a triplicate carbon copy, carbonless copy. 877-500-5266. That spells KBOO. 877 is toll free. 500 is what you got to remember. And then 5266 spells KBOO. Once again, 877-500-5266. That's you right now getting a Democracy Now! T-shirt for $10 a month. You can do it. Going back to programming that is on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of History and Strategy of German Anti-Fascism on Saturday, September 8th, 7 p.m. at Cider Riot in Portland. Organized anti-fascist resistance is necessary. It's useful to take a look at different experiences built from movements in other countries. The speakers will present the major strategies, struggles, and theories of the German anti-fascist movement from 1932 to the present. Again, that's History and Strategy of German Anti-Fascism on Saturday, September 8th, 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunch Box, located at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue in Portland, serving breakfast and box burgers all day, with delivery available. Lunch was provided by Taqueria Los Gorditos, with 6 Portland locations. Menu and ordering information at losgorditospdx.com. And dinner was provided by Crush Bar, located at 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. Crush is an all-inclusive event space, bar, and restaurant open till midnight or later daily. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Gazelle Consulting, providing HIPAA compliance and IT security services to businesses throughout Portland and across the West Coast, including HIPAA consulting, software and risk assessments, and trainings. More information online at gazelleconsulting.org. It is 5:02 and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, police named the assailant at today's mass shooting in Cincinnati.
We're going to have an update for you on the residential infill here in Portland.
And Oregon's apples are now entering the front lines of a looming trade war with China.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 6, 2018. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and so we urge you to become a member. Just call this number, 877-500-5266. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Grace Ann Smith. A gunman entered a bank building in downtown Cincinnati and started firing this morning. Police responded to a call about shots fired in the loading dock of the building. The shooter then moved to the lobby where he continued firing and exchanged fire with police officers. The shooting killed 4 people, including the shooter. 2 more are seriously injured. Police say the shooter was 29-year-old Omar Enrique Santa Perez. Mayor John Cranley said the gunman, quote, was actively shooting innocent victims with no specific target. He said, "This is an American problem that we as Americans must solve by putting ideology last and human life first. Please join me in praying for the victims, praying for our country, and join me in this fight to end this senseless gun violence," end quote. There was a spike in shootings in Cincinnati during May and June, bringing the total of 225 shootings in the year of 2018. Many gun violence activists and survivors, including some from Parkland shooting, are calling on politicians to enforce stricter gun laws instead of offering thoughts and prayers for the victims of their families. This shooting in Cincinnati and another shooting Monday that critically injured three people have some city leaders wondering what it will take for politicians to enact gun reform laws that will bring change.
The term missing middle housing was coined in 2010 to define a range of multi-unit housing types compatible in scale with single-family homes. Now cities across the United States, such as Seattle, Atlanta, Nashville, and Washington, D.C., are turning to middle housing as a free market housing solution. Mayor Wheeler's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is currently putting the finishing touches on Portland's implementation known as the Residential Infill Project, or RIP. For the perspective of renters, KBOO's Joe Meyer spoke with Serene Impey, an organizer with Portland Tenants United.
A main feature of the nationwide push for the so-called missing middle housing policy is a reliance on the magic of the free market. This includes the theory that rather than requiring or subsidizing low-income housing, governments do best by removing barriers in zoning laws and building codes. To see how this is working at the trickle-down level, I spoke with Soren Impey, a Portland renter and an organizer with Portland Tenants United.
My name is Soren Impey, and I'm an organizer with Portland Tenants United. I work on the Outreach, Advocacy, and Coalition working group at Portland Tenants United, and one of the focuses of this working group is zoning and how to create more needed housing for people who rent in the metro area, with a particular focus on creating housing that meets our chronic affordable housing deficit.
Who do you think the Residential Infill Project is for?
I think the Residential Infill Project was originally developed based on the acknowledgement that our zoning status quo, where arguably something around 50 to 60% of the land in Portland is zoned for residential housing, so basically excludes the development of rental housing, which tends to be affordable housing. You know, there's very little owned housing which is affordable anywhere in Portland. So there's an acknowledgement that that is a limit. And so there were some good intentions. Unfortunately, many of the people involved in the numerous sets of stakeholder committees that were developed were people involved in real estate development, people involved in consulting about urban design, and even some of the people involved who have a background in affordable housing came at it from the perspective of providers of housing, or people who are, in essence, landlords of affordable housing. And there really needed to be more of a voice for tenants and for the vulnerable communities that are threatened by displacement. And if that voice had been there in that process, I think RIP would look very different from the way it did today. So I guess from my perspective as a tenant, is I looked at RIP as there's this big battle between, you know, people who live in residential neighborhoods and didn't want to see the character of their neighborhood change, and people who wanted to see sort of modest changes in how those neighborhoods look, you know, in terms of opening them up for ADUs, opening them up for duplexes and triplexes. From the perspective of a tenant, neither of those goals really do much for housing affordability. So that's one of the reasons that the last set of testimony the Portland Tenants United gave is that we oppose RIP and want the city to start over again and to listen not just to, you know, people who you know really are not concerned about our you know, affordable housing crisis, you know, but more concerned about the way that Portland should look from the perspective of preservation or the perspective of urban design and urban planning, with a focus on sort of the idea that Portland should be accessible to everyone, to the communities that have been displaced, such as, you know, the waves of gentrification that have displaced people of color in the city. I don't see much in RIP that really addresses, you know, that chronic and ongoing housing injustice.
Does the city of Portland have an extra responsibility to marginalized communities because of past discriminatory housing practices?
We think the city can start to address the problems with redlining, with gentrification, with urban development and redevelopment by proactively working both via zoning and regulation and funding of public and nonprofit housing to regulate the market in such a way that the city is actually providing needed housing and not encouraging housing that isn't needed, where there isn't a deficit. Because as I say, you know, the regulations we have today in the city are not working because those regulations are clearly allowing the private market to overbuild housing, the type of housing where we don't really have a chronic shortage, housing, you know, that is affordable to upper income people. So given that the market today is already regulated and that the market has many incentives today for this type of housing, we think the city should start, you know, putting its fingers on the scale to allow for the production of the housing that has been, where we've seen a chronic deficit and where the city, frankly, has played a role in, incentivizing, gentrification, incentivizing a desire of developers to build high-end housing.
That was Portland renter and organizer with Portland Tenants United, Soren Impey. The residential infill project may have started out with some equity ideas. However, the ensuing process was stacked with developers, realtors, and others standing to benefit from high-end growth, and free market high-end growth is what RIP has become. Finally, Portland Tenants United calls for a complete do-over of the residential infill project, this time with Portland renters at the table. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
Sales of Oregon and Northwest apples and cherries face falling prices as President Trump's trade war with China is beginning to bite. Today is the day of the public comment period ends, and proposed tariffs against imported Chinese goods, and President Trump has said he intends to wait no longer to impose the fees. The price of cherries has sold in Hong Kong has already dropped by as much as 40%. The impact of China's retaliatory tariffs could be as much as $2.6 billion, and producers are saying that the $1.2 billion in compensatory purchases from the Department of Agriculture will not be enough to hedge the price impact. Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesman Gao Feng took a defiant attitude about the sanctions, saying, quote, "If the U.S. takes new trade measures against China, China will take necessary countermeasures. Any measures pressuring China will be ineffective as the trade war can't solve any problems," end quote. According to market analyst Barclays Capital, trade volume with China is likely to drop by $156 billion under the 2017 rate. President Trump has said he is willing to place a tariff on all the $500 billion in annual trade with China.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening, so now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now is the fearless and lovely Teresa Mitchell to tell us more about how we can all support KBOO Community Radio. Teresa?
Oh, I feel so flattered. We've been listening to Grace Ann and Annette reading Layla's news items and other news items that we generated here at KBOO News, and we're listening to Joe Meyer generating original news content, talking about the residential infill content. And I have to ask you, how many times do you tune in a radio news program and hear someone actually challenge the hegemony of the almighty buck? And it seems like the almighty buck is particularly resilient when it comes to the rental market, because we've been talking about this for a long time, as you may recall, here in Portland. I'd like to ask you to step up to this, your community radio station, with your support. And I'd like to suggest that you join at a rate of $10 a month. And for that, we would love to give you a KBOO logo t-shirt. Actually, we'd do that for a mere $6.25 a month, but say $6.25. Or now, let me ask you for $10 a month. Colin, you can do the $10. If you got $10 now, you'll have $10 next month. So you can become a sustaining member, and you can do that by calling us right now at 877-500-5266. 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266. I know that you value getting news from many perspectives, from different perspectives, and like I said, from a perspective that challenges the almighty buck. You get that here at KBOO, and there's a reason why you're listening and why you have listened for so long. And I do hope that you are ready to make the decision to call us right now, because you know you're going to procrastinate if you don't do it right now, and spend that $10 a month, which you can do. It's a little bit of a, you know, it's a little sacrifice as opposed to nothing. And I think that it's time for you to do it, don't you think? 877-500-5266 is the number to call. I think this makes a difference to get the word out, to actually just have the information and the attitude that can make a difference. And through you, we can hold policymakers and officials accountable. I think an example of that would be the great reporting yesterday by Sam on the city council. It had the tone that comes from, he knows what he's talking about, he knows the framework, and there was just a little bit of snark around the edges as he reported on what was going down there at city council. It made for some good reporting, not just to listen to, but in terms of content. That's what I like about KBOO News. 877-500-5266, 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266. You can still get a Democracy Now! T-shirt if you want for $10 a month. And we also have a KBOO logo T-shirt with our militant transmitter with the exploding star on the top. Actually, it's transmitting, I guess. 877-500-5266. One last time, that number, 877-500-5266. Back to news.
A Portland woman is suing her apartment complex, saying that staff negligence led to a raccoon attack. Heidi Schultz was walking her dogs at the Wimbledon Square Apartments when a raccoon lunged toward her from under a car. Schultz said she and other tenants have previously complained about trash outside the buildings. Schultz is being represented by the law firm Kafori & McDougall, which cited a dumpster fire last month as evidence of the trash problem. Her lawyer, Jason Kafori, said, quote, "This place had insects, rodents, raccoons running around because they had trash everywhere." Schultz says her medical bills are around $26,000. Prime Group, the Los Angeles-based company that owns the apartments, would not comment on the lawsuit at this time. They have been sued previously when a resident of the same apartment complex fell through a walkway after filing several complaints about the safety of their floorboards. The plaintiff was awarded $20 million in damages.
The annual Vancouver Peace and Justice Fair and Concert is coming up at Esther Short Park in Vancouver, Washington this Saturday. This will be the 15th year for the fair. It will include more than 100 exhibitors. Booths will promote the interests and views of Black Lives Matter, the Rachel Corey Foundation, Narrow Pro-Choice, the Northwest Gender Alliance, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, and many others. According to its website, quote, "The Vancouver Peace and Justice Fair builds community among the grassroots peace and justice groups in Southwest Washington." Again, the fair's coming up this Saturday, September the 8th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 8th and Columbia in Vancouver. And you can find out more information about it at vancouverpeaceandjusticefair.org.
Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision legalizing abortion in all 50 states, has come under a shadow as the Senate Supreme Court confirmation hearings continue for Brett Kavanaugh. An email from Kavanaugh that Senate Republicans hid as confidential but revealed by an anonymous source to the New York Times said, quote, I am not sure that all illegal scholars refer to Roe as the settled law of the land at the Supreme Court level, since the court can always overrule its precedent, and three current justices on the court would do so. The revelation flies in the face of Republican Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, who has designated 189,000 such documents as confidential and inaccessible to the Senate and the press. The hearings have been fraught with protests from Democrats and some 60 members of the public after Grassley convened the senators less than a day after releasing more than 40,000 pages of documents, ensuring that no one could analyze them before the gavel fell. The National Abortion Rights Action League was quoted in the New York Times saying, quote, "Brett Kavanaugh's emails are rock-solid evidence that he has been hiding his true beliefs, and if he is given a lifetime seat on the Supreme Court, he will gut Roe versus Wade, criminalize abortion, and punish women." Everything he said yesterday in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee about settled law was nothing but a show to mislead the Senate, end quote. The hearings also focused on Russiagate with questions from Democratic Senator Kamala Harris of California. She wanted to know whether Kavanaugh had discussed the issue with President Trump's lawyers. Judge Kavanaugh would not respond to Senator Harris, but later said to Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah that he did not recall any such conversations. Kavanaugh also avoided answering questions about presidential privilege, executive pardoning power, and, quote, dark money contributions.
Now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture. On today's episode, South Dakota's Rosebud Reservation is getting more time to improve its health facilities.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Federal officials are giving the Indian Health Service Hospital on South Dakota's Rosebud Reservation more time to improve conditions. The facility's federal funds are at stake. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
As recently as last December, a blog post by the IHS was headlined, "Rosebud IHS Provides Quality Care in Community." That post was written several months before a July inspection by investigators for the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Those inspectors say they learned of several cases of below-standard care, including a drunken 12-year-old girl who tried to hang herself while she was left alone, and a 35-year-old man who died of a heart attack in the emergency room after he was pepper-sprayed and restrained. Federal officials say the hospital in Rosebud has another week to improve care conditions. That's past an initial deadline. Those officials say the facility could lose federal funding if the benchmark isn't met. Leaders with the hospital and the Indian Health Service have said they have a plan in place to resolve issues. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
A group of Native women from North Dakota traveled to Washington, D.C. this week to deliver a letter to lawmakers, which was signed by 41 Native women in their state opposing the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. Members of the group attended confirmation hearings and met with lawmakers, including U.S. North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp, to express their concerns, which include Native voting rights, environmental protection, and health care. The Native women were among other women's groups rallying in the nation's capital. Ruth Buffalo, a citizen of the Mandan, Hidatsan, Arikara Nation, was among the delegation. She says it was important for the Native women to express their views.
Oftentimes in different movements, the Native woman indigenous voice is not included. There's not that strong intersectionality that we need. The importance of having our voice front and center, because while white women and other races still struggle for their women rights to be acknowledged, as indigenous women, we're still struggling to be acknowledged as human beings.
Buffalo says there were also other indigenous women advocating on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, confirmation hearings continue in Washington. A healthcare worker for the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma is no longer employed after allegedly posting disparaging comments about Native Americans on social media. In a statement, Choctaw leaders say they learned of the comments over the weekend at the tribe's annual Labor Day festival. The Tulsa World reports nurse Jill White was the employee. Her Snapchat went viral with a selfie and the message, "My fake smile, excited to make sure a bunch of fat Natives don't stroke out playing softball with no shoes or shirts on." Her friends on social media say it was a joke. White is no longer employed with the Choctaw Nation. The tribe's statement says disparaging words, even jokes, are never acceptable. The Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians recently filed a lawsuit against the Interior Department over land into trust in Michigan. The lawsuit challenges the decision denying the tribe's application for land near an airport and in downtown Lansing. It alleges the denial of trust violates federal land claims. The tribe plans to use the lands for gaming and other tribal businesses. The Interior Department decision was made in 2017. The tribe says it weighed all its legal options and will carry on the fight. The Cape Cod Times reports the Interior Department is set to make a decision by September 21st on the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe's land into trust. The decision is whether the federal government will keep the tribe's land in Mashpee and Taunton in trust. Opponents of the tribe's plan to build a casino are fighting the decision in court. Tribes across the country are closely watching the decision, which could impact Indian land policies. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it's your turn. Joining us now, once again, is the lovely Teresa Mitchell.
Hello. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Our news volunteers come in here on top of their daily jobs or on their days off, and sometimes bicycling for miles to arrive. There was a volunteer I found out yesterday arrived from Rothie Road, and that's a hell of a long way if you know how far it is from there to Inner Southeast. It's here that you get the update, the all-important update that on the news that you need to know that the raccoons aren't taking it anymore. They're on the attack. And if you're pro-raccoon, this is time to call in, 877-500-5266. Which side are you on, raccoon or not? 877-500-5266, and you can show your solidarity with the raccoons fighting conditions in rundown apartment buildings by calling us and pledging $25 a month. For that, you can get our KBOO hoodie, which you're going to need. By the time it arrives, you're going to need it. That's 877-500-5266. That's you. And that's $25 a month. We have your size in the hoodie. And it's like 3 minutes on the phone with our volunteers who are ready to take your calls even as I speak. They're poised with their fingers over the keyboards, or I guess they might possibly be enjoying some coffee and some of the donated food that we have here. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, and we really do need you to do it right now. It's been a good first day so far on this membership drive. 50 years we've been doing this, 50 years, and I've been doing it for a couple of decades myself. I'm really glad to actually be here and to be a part of it and to have a dedicated part of my life to making news, making information happen, moving towards that open, participatory, democratic, informed society that we would like to live in, that we would like to see happen. Being informed this way helps you navigate the world around you better and helps you understand what issues affect your community. The KBOO Evening News is a tool that you can use every single day to engage in topics with personal impact, as I was talking about with the aforementioned raccoons. You value the KBOO Evening News as an alternative to the mainstream 24-hour news cycle, and we break news all the time that's important to you, your family, and your neighbors. The number to call is 877-500-5266. 3 minutes on the phone with us. I think that you'll be glad that you did. I think it feels a little different to hear the news or to hear other content on KBOO and to know that you are actually a part of it, that you have pledged your whatever you think is an appropriate amount, but I'm suggesting $25 a month, upping your pledge perhaps to $25 a month so that you can get one of these KBOO hoodies. You know, people have told me they a lot of people wear their hoodies coming in here, and I can tell they're quite satisfied with them and they express satisfaction. I think you'll be glad to have one. Of course, you can get a hoodie somewhere else that doesn't say KBOO and it doesn't cost you $25 a month. That's not what it's really about. What it's about is your support. But we're glad to give you the hoodie, and I think that you'll be glad you did. 877-500-5266. It's 877-500-KBOO. 877 is toll-free. 500 is half a thousand. 500 is how many laps you have to do at the Indianapolis Speedway. 877-500, and then 5266 spells KBOO. 877-500-5266. 5266. News and information you hear from KBOO is essential every single day, whether it's a historic day or a day like the rest. And I think you need to make sure that we're always here for you. Your support goes to a media that does not give a platform to hate speech and oppression. You can rely on KBOO to confront local issues. You're an important part of this effort, and we need your cash because that's the essential part of our funding model. It's always has been. You know, government funding has come and gone. We don't count on it always being there, but we do count on you always being there because it's about your participation. It's going out to you, and it's for you. It's community radio, and you're part of that community. Hundreds and hundreds of people pay us every month to keep KBOO on the air, and you can be one of those persons. I'm asking you to join the community project intended for a more inclusive media. Please join KBOO right now by calling 877-500-5266. Make the phone ring. Make us happy. We love to hear that sound. A small expense can be a big part of your day if you will join now. 877-500-5266. Please consider joining and making KBOO's place in your day, how it enriches and informs you regularly. You can be a part of that. That's worth something to you, I think. We value how KBOO informs you, so why not become a member right now? And I'd like to thank Jeremy, from Portland, renewing. Zarina from Portland, who's renewing. And Chris from Ariel, Washington, also renewing the pledge. Please join Jeremy, Zarina, and Chris right now. 877-500-5266.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you gently that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on how historically black college and university students are addressing sexual assault problems on campus. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio, with news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 56 degrees. Tomorrow, we're looking at sunny skies with a high of 86 degrees. And today in history, in 1522, the Vittoria, one of Ferdinand Magellan's five ships, arrived in Sanlúcar de Barrameda in Spain. This completed the first circumnavigation in the world. And our quote of the day is from Neil deGrasse Tyson, who said, quote, "The universe is under no obligation to make sense to you."
The Public News Service is a member-supported media outlet that aims to cover issues that may not be covered in the mainstream media. On today's roundup, Trump talks about the anonymous insider and threatens the media, how Brett Kavanaugh can affect the health of Missouri's waterways, and how wolves are bringing back the aspen trees to the Yellowstone Park.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Thursday, September the 6th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. President Trump fires back at the anonymous senior staffer who authored an opinion piece in the New York Times. Also on the Thursday rundown, Trump visits South Dakota as the trade war continues, and we'll let you know how wolves are helping aspen return to northern Yellowstone. Now, our top story, President Donald Trump reacted Wednesday to an anonymous opinion piece in the New York Times, purportedly written by a senior White House official. The Huffington Post reports Trump responded angrily to the op-ed by calling the article a gutless editorial. The Times piece details a concerted internal effort to derail the president from causing damage to the country, citing his unpredictable urges and anti-democratic ideas. The Post notes Trump made the comments to reporters during a White House event with sheriffs from across the country. He added the Times was full of dishonest people and said the media will be out of business after he leaves office. Meantime, Trump makes a visit to South Dakota this week as the first payment periods begin for commodity producers hurt by the trade war. Here's Ross Brown.
The market facilitation program allows producers of soybeans, wheat, corn, sorghum, cotton, pork, and dairy to receive money from a $12 billion federal trade compensation package. South Dakota State University economics professor Joe Santis says commodity producers are especially hurt by trade disputes because they come after years of already low prices for grain.
It's a tough time to have this happen to them. It's not a tough time for the aggregate economy, for the macroeconomy, but it's a tough time for commodity producers. Not that this would ever be good, but you don't want it right now.
Details about the president's visit to South Dakota have been sparse so far, but he will be stumping for the state's GOP governor candidate at a fundraiser.
Distribution of the aid package begins as Congress continues to debate the farm bill. Would Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court mean more polluted waterways in Missouri? Eric Tegenhoff reports the state chapter of the Sierra Club believes so, pointing to a ruling Kavanaugh says is one of his most significant.
In 2014, he argued the EPA should have considered monetary costs when it implemented regulations on mercury and other harmful emissions from power plants. Former Missouri Department of Natural Resources employee Jennifer Connor says the state lists more than 60 polluted waterways, and mercury is a major concern, especially contamination in fish. It's led to fish advisories for sensitive groups such as Connor, who is pregnant.
That's definitely a huge concern, especially in the Ozarks, where fishing is a way of life. And, you know, you don't really think about the negative health impacts that can occur from fishing.
The State Department of Health and Senior Services suggests people in sensitive groups only eat certain fish caught in Missouri waters once a month. In the D.C. Circuit Court case on EPA mercury regulations, Kavanaugh ruled against the majority. However, the U.S. Supreme Court ultimately sided with Kavanaugh in a 5-4 decision.
Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing continues today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And with 51 applicants vying for a chance to snag Virginia's first 5 medical marijuana licenses, reform groups say it's in everyone's best interest for the process to be open and transparent.
The state panel that will award the Commonwealth's first medical marijuana licenses held a closed-door meeting Tuesday to announce it will keep that same process in deciding which company will win a license. Jen Michelle Padini with Virginia Normal says there are unanswered questions from providers coming in from out of state that may have compliance issues Virginians should know about.
Consumers have the right to know that the providers who ultimately win these licenses are in fact the best situated to provide their medicines.
The Virginia Board of Pharmacy's executive director says the attorney general provided advice that medical cannabis applicants are treated as medical license applicants and are therefore exempt from the Virginia Freedom of Information Act. I'm Tramell Gomes.
And the public can now comment on the Trump administration proposal to replace the Clean Power Plan, an Obama-era rule aimed at drastically reducing carbon emissions from coal power plants. Under what's being called the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, states would develop their own reduction goals and submit their plans within 3 years to the EPA. Dan Sawmiller with the Natural Resources Defense Council in Ohio says the new proposal nixes the Clean Power Plan's specific goals for reducing greenhouse gas emissions in each state.
As of 2017, Ohio was already cutting carbon emissions by nearly 17% compared to 2012. So this is really an unfortunate step backwards that means more carbon pollution, more climate catastrophe, and a more dangerous world for our future.
And finally, Eric Gladys tells us aspen trees are on the rebound in and around Yellowstone National Park. A new report says predators deserve the credit.
Luke Painter, the study's lead author and a wildlife ecologist at Oregon State University, says the trees were in decline for decades largely because concentrated elk populations were eating new tree shoots. He says since wolves were reintroduced, elk numbers have decreased and most of the herd's winter range is now outside the park.
So that's relieved the pressure on the young aspen plants, and we're seeing new aspen trees beginning to grow. So this is a sign that things really have turned around for aspen in Northern Yellowstone.
Wolves, along with bears, cougars, and hunters outside the park, are culling the elk herd, which translates into fewer elk grazing on aspen and other woody species. Putting wolves back into the park in 1995 was a point of controversy because of ranchers' concerns about losing livestock and dogs.
Restoring aspen in northern Yellowstone has been a goal of the National Park Service for decades. A goal largely has been reached by letting the animals do the heavy lifting. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are a member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
And now's your chance to show your support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. And checking back in with us is Teresa Mitchell to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio. And we're hoping to hear more cowbell.
Teresa. More cowbell. That could happen, especially if you join the Raccoon Liberation Front. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. I'd like to ask you to join right now to up your pledge or to start a pledge at $25 a month. And for that, we would love to give you your access to a KBOO two-sided hoodie in your size. That's 877-500-5266. Why 25? Well, you know, inflation's moving on, ain't it? And I remember when $40 was pretty much the standard annual amount we were trying to get, and that was a long time ago, and that shows you what kind of age I'm approaching. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. How many times have you heard or said to a friend, I was listening to KBOO and heard this story, followed by the story? Probably not about the Raccoon Liberation Front, but that's what KBOO is all about. The stories, news, and insights that make you stop and think and start your own conversations. And joking aside, I'm actually proud that we were able to bring the stories that we brought today, especially like the original news content from Joe Meyer, which is once again becoming a regular thing. Joe is coming back after a few years hiatus, and it's really great to see him use his expertise once again to contribute to the community. And so, contributing to the community is what we need you to do right now. It's community radio. We give to you, and we need you to give back at 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. And maybe you won't be near the radio later today. It might slip your mind. So take care of your contribution now. Fight that procrastination. While you're thinking about it, this is the time to do it. Support from listeners like you adds up to the largest share of funding for everything you hear on KBOO, and that formula has worked for us and for you for 50 years now. 1968 is when we started. I was only 10 years old and living in Texas, so I wasn't part of that. But I did come around here in around 1990, and I've been here since, and very glad, very grateful to have been given the chance to contribute to my community using the skills that I have. And now I've had the chance to actually join the news team sort of temporarily. And Grace Ann and Annette have been reading the news today. Layla produced a news reader for us. And as I was saying, Joe did the audio that you were hearing, and we have audio also that we run from our national sources. And that's the sort of thing that puts together to make our KBOO evening news broadcast. And we need you to join it as well. 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive of the special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Joe Meyer, Layla Kanan, Yasmin Kobanoglu, Annette Newell. The producer is Grace Ann Smith. Our engineer is Aaron Yankee. The interim KBOO Evening News Director is Ann Sam Bowman. The interim KBOO Evening News Directors are Sam Bowman and Teresa Mitchell. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on K220HR Hood River. I'm Grace Ann Smith.
And I'm Annette Newell. You know, Teresa just poked in here with a sign reading, "Free the Raccoons."
Oh.
Wow. She's on a mission. Okay. Well, coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Positively Revolting, Lynn returns with Ani to talk about renowned storyteller Michael Mead about his latest book, Awakening the Soul, Deep Responses to a Troubled World. At 9, Pacific Underground covers the untold stories of Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Northwest. At 10, Valley Views looks at solutions to the housing and healthcare challenges in Lynn and Benton counties. Then at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, a Radio Geekly discusses the summer convention season, plus reports from Wizard World, Geek Girl Con, and more. Now, all of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. Of course, you can become a member during this fall membership drive. All you got to do is call this number, 877-500-5266.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Today's News in Depth comes from Making Contact. The title is About Last Night, How HBCU Students Are Addressing Sexual Assault on Campus.
If every little thing that you did made a difference,
would you do things a little different?
This is Making Contact, a program that informs, inspires, and moves people to take action.
Now is the time to pass this bill.
Would you believe me if I told you
you're the reason we are here? Would it be meaning to your breathing
if your exhale made the air?
Students around the country are entering a new school year. What awaits them are new classes, new students, and hopefully new approaches to old problems. Some students at several prominent historically Black colleges and universities, or HBCUs as we call them, have asked school administrators to address sexual assault differently. Last year, student protests at Morehouse College, Spelman College, Hampton University, and Howard University aim to highlight inadequacies in the way sexual assault and rape cases are handled. We're focusing on HBCUs because out of the nearly 5,000 colleges that exist in the U.S., just over 100 are categorized as historically Black. Students at these schools, whom are predominantly Black, tend to underreport sexual violence and are often not included in national conversations about it. We're interested in amplifying their voices and their particular take on the issue. With us today are a few current and former HBCU students who have a few things to say about the way sexual assault plays out at HBCUs and how to make campus safer for everyone. Let's do some quick introductions.
I'm Amos Jackson III. I'm a senior at Howard University. I'm the SGA president there, and I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated.
I'm Kyla Wright. I'm a senior as well, journalism major at Hampton University, and I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan.
I'm Yvette. I'm from New York. I'm on a book writing sabbatical in Denver right now, and I went to Bennett College in North Carolina.
Welcome, guys. I'm your host, Erin Mathewson, and I'm an alum of Howard University. You're listening to Making Contact in collaboration with Bitch Media and Dishonor Roll. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I'd like to hear from each of our guests about why you decided to attend a historically Black college. And for anyone who's not familiar, these are institutions that were established before 1964 with the purpose of educating Black Americans when other institutions would not. Students of all races are welcome, but Black culture is often celebrated to a high degree at these places. So Amos, let's start with you. Why did you choose Howard?
Funny enough, I had no intention of going to an HBCU. My whole family went to HBCUs, and I was like, no, I want to be different. I want to go to a top-tier institution. I don't want to go to an HBCU. And then, funny enough, I didn't get the ACT score for those institutions that were recruiting me, and so I committed to this small Division III school. And ironically, one Sunday at church, I met this guy. So he invited me to this Sigma Pi Phi Boule chapter meeting. He set me up by bringing all of these prominent Howard alum that lived in Florida. And I was like, okay. I called my dad that day and I was like, I'm going to Howard.
So I dealt with racism at a very young age. So I went on a Black college tour with my church and fell in love with all the HBCUs from Tennessee State to Hampton and Spelman, everywhere. So I knew by about the 9th or 10th grade that I wanted to go to a HBCU. So I got scholarship money fortunately to go to Hampton. Hampton gave me the highest scholarship. It was a beautiful campus. They had a top-tier journalism program and everything in between. I knew I wanted to be surrounded by people who looked like me, who acted like me, and who had the same morals and values as me, and I didn't want to succumb to racism for any longer. It was literally the best decision I've made. My children will be attending HBCUs. They don't have a choice. And that is it.
That's funny.
Yvette, what about you?
I knew very early on that I wanted to attend a historically black college or university. And so I encountered some struggles when I got to high school and ended up dropping out when I was 16. And HBCUs were the only institutions who were willing to accept someone who took the SAT but did not have a traditional high school diploma. And so I applied to three HBCUs. The one I decided initially to attend was the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. And I attended there for a year and then encountered some money troubles. And so I was actually sitting at home. I had taken a semester off watching CNN, and I saw Bennett College's former president, Dr. Julianne Malvo, just talking about this school I'd never heard of before. And she was just singing all of its praises. Like, if you're a black girl who wants to turn into a black woman and be educated and celebrated, like, this is the school that you should go to. And I'll agree with both of the people who went before me that it's the best decision I've ever made.
Well, I'm glad everybody enjoyed their experiences, because we all know some people who did not enjoy their experiences at HBCUs. But before we dive into the way sexual assault impacts your campuses, I just wanted to talk about the bigger context we find ourselves in right now. Like, I just feel like we're in this Me Too moment, and I'm wondering how this has affected your conversations on campus. Like, I feel like there's a lot of progressive art and music coming out at the same time as some pretty misogynistic stuff. I still can't get over R. Kelly's single, I Admit. But then I wonder if it's countered by songs like Nice for What from Drake. So I'm just curious, how has all this affected your conversations about sex and sexual assault?
What I found since, especially because we're approaching the 1 year anniversary of Me Too, is that there are far more people who are willing to have these conversations and to have them publicly. And I think social media has played a big part in that, in terms of being able to respond immediately to, say, R. Kelly's terrible 19-minute song, I Admit, or being able to foster a conversation publicly in a way that they may not be able to do in their own families, especially if they're encountering pushback. And so I don't know if Me Too is really the catalyst for that. I think it's been happening prior to that, particularly among feminists online. But I think that we are shifting national consciousness about what sexual violence looks like, what sexual assault looks like, and the way that institutions work to protect people who are already powerful and how they turn out the powerless.
And I agree. Like, I think it's so sad that Me Too was started by a black woman, but it didn't really garner support until a white woman.
No one knew
until a white woman said something about Me Too. Mm. So that's even something that even goes into a deeper aspect of, like, HBCUs. Similar to the political engagement, civic engagement of black people that stemmed from Donald Trump and people like him being elected into office and that whole Roy Moore situation, there was a silver lining in it, because it also made people more aware that, like, if a guy got elected president of the United States, it has to be happening at least down the street from you. I think we're going to see a response to that too, following Me Too and all of these prominent people that you used to look up to, and now you're like, wow, how can I not condemn and really change the conversation?
Yeah. And I would just add that change the conversation is something we're trying to do right here. Like, let's talk about the dating scene first, since according to the Center for Disease Control, just over 50% of female victims of rape reported being assaulted by an intimate partner, and just over 40% by an acquaintance. And I feel like at HBCUs in particular, this conversation gets tied up into morality, because I feel like a lot of the schools are kind of like unofficially connected to, or, you know, very openly celebrate various forms of Christianity. Yvette, what do you, when you were an undergrad, and Yvette and I should say, I don't want to speak for Yvette, I was in undergrad a little bit over, about 13 years ago. Yvette, what about you?
Yeah, I finished undergrad 6 years ago. So it has been a while. But I attended a same-sex college, and so the dating was a little difficult unless you wanted to venture to another campus. So a lot of the dating was happening across campuses, or mostly Bennett girls were going to North Carolina A&T because our college didn't allow men on campus. And when they did come on campus, they were being harassed by security. They were not allowed to go into our dormitory rooms if you lived on campus. They had to stay in the parlor. And so if you had a male visitor who wanted to come by, he would like become a spectacle. And so much of what they consider dirt needs to be done off campus or out of the eye of the administrations. And so a lot of the relationships that I had when I was in college were very private. But I think on the flip side of that, I'm very fortunate that I never encountered sexual violence when I was in college. But had I don't know if I would have been comfortable saying, hey, I've been assaulted, given that I was basically lambasted for having fun as a college student.
Amos, you said that things had changed at Howard. How is sex talked about among students and administrators now?
I've seen it change big time from my freshman year to now going into my senior year. We have a lot of more panels. We have organizations that are strictly based on safe sex, like Safe Spaces, HU. Our campus does a lot of sexual assault stuff. And a lot of the fraternities and sororities on campus are definitely tackling that. And even from a administrative standpoint, we're actually launching this new campus safety program regarding sexual assault, dating violence, and interpersonal violence. It's like on every syllabus now. And so it's we're actually moving in a good direction towards making Howard University safe for all students. And student government is playing a big part in that as far as promoting new policies. We're actually doing a program with EverFi where students will have to take mandatory sexual assault prevention training, Title IX training, diversity and inclusion training before every semester online.
If you're just tuning in, this is Making Contact, RadioProject.org, and the Dishonor Roll Reporting Project. You were just hearing the voice of Amos Jackson, a senior at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Before him was Yvette Dion of Bitch Media, and an alum of Bennett College in North Carolina.
Coming up next is Rose City Native Radio, but first we go to Teresa Mitchell to talk about supporting people-powered community radio on the one and only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
Thanks for tuning in to KBOO. I'm glad that you're here listening about shifting national consciousness, to quote. Shifting national consciousness is about what sexual assault looks like. It's a serious topic, and another quote or a reference from the CDC, 50% of sexual assaults coming from intimate partners, 40% from acquaintances. That's some painful truth to listen to. I think that's the sort of thing that you can count on from KBOO to bring you the programming that is relevant and matters to you, even if it does, you know, sometimes kind of sting to hear these facts, but that's just the way life is in the United States. I'd like to invite you to join this community. We all gather together to make this news happen. Many generations now of effort have gone into KBOO, 50 years of effort, and we've done it because we can count on your contribution. We can count on you coming through at 877-500-5266. Month after month, year after year, we've always been able to go to the community and make this community radio actually happen. And I think that's an amazing thing. I think it says something about the strength of the community. And it says something that we're on the right track, that we want to get out the news, the truth to you. And do that on a consistent basis and stay relevant. Do you agree? 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. This is a great time to call in. As you can hear, there's a, you know, kind of a gathering happening back here, and we're waiting for those first calls to come in for this particular break. So you can make that happen, and when you hear the phone ring, that'll actually be you. There'll be a bit of a delay because that's how we run things to keep it legal here at KBOO. But the number to call is 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266. The news and information you hear from KBOO is essential every single day. Whether it's a historic day or a day like the rest, KBOO will be here when you need us. I know that you rely on KBOO to confront local issues in a way that no other radio station can. The money that you're going to invest right now is going to come back to you as a service that's essential, especially as mainstream outlets mass-produce feeble attempts at news. We can only step outside of this new norm because of your support. Your support's got to come in, and it's got to come in right now, and it's got to be you, and don't let procrastination get you. You might not be near a radio later today. So call right now, 877-500-5266, 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. This month, the Development Committee will convene on Friday, September 28th.
Instead of our usual date,
we will be meeting at 7 p.m. in Studio One.
Join us for snacks
and solidarity
as we
raise funds for KABU.
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 KABU would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunch Box, located at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue in Portland, serving breakfast and box burgers all day, with delivery available. Lunch was provided by Taqueria Los Gorditos, with 6 Portland locations. Menu and ordering information at losgorditospdx.com. And dinner was provided by Crush Bar, located at 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. Crush is an all-inclusive event space, bar, and restaurant open till midnight or later daily. For more information on how you can support KABU, call 877-500-5266 right now.
The time is